Are you registered to vote? Headcount is a nonpartisan organization that works with the music and entertainment industry to get fans to vote. To update or check your voter registration status, go to headcount.org, where you'll find all the information you need to be ready for Election Day.
Headcount tours with musicians to help concert attendees register to vote, but you don't need to leave your house to register or to get voting info. Register to vote by visiting headcount.org.
Hello, and welcome to
Mixtape Memories.
I'm Jenners.
And I'm Matt Hart Spade.
And we're here to talk about 90s divas.
I'm so excited. We were thinking about doing something like this a couple episodes ago, and now here it is. The day has come.
Yeah. You know, not typically, you know, what we cover here, but we thought it'd be a fun episode.
Yeah, I mean, it was such an integral part of the 90s that it kind of seems like we should kind of cover it and have a fun little kind of pop-centric episode. But I guess before we get into all the great divas from the 90s and early aughts, maybe we should define diva, because I feel like through the years, the definition has changed, but it actually, the original definition of diva and like the textbook dictionary definition is, it actually comes from the world of opera. It's meant to kind of signify this incredible woman's voice in, you know, whether it's in theater or cinema or pop music. And then, you know, for a while, it was very closely related to the term prima donna, which had a very negative connotation. But I feel like that all changed in the 90s once there was like the diva fandom. In my view, it was like the beginning of stan culture.
Yeah. I mean, and like, you know, in the beginning, I feel like diva maybe didn't have too much of a, well, maybe it always had a negative connotation, but like,
I don't
they
know,
were using it, you know, kind of like as if it was a positive thing for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess ultimately it was just a woman with some sort of extraordinary talent that was kind of breaking through in a major way. But I guess, I mean, it kind of goes back to just the misogyny of you know, not just American culture, but worldwide culture, that, you know, a powerful woman is seen as like, what's her problem? Is she a bitch? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it kind of, unfortunately,
true.
Has gone hand in hand.
That's true. You can almost exchange them today. Like, oh, she's a diva, she's a bitch, kind of thing.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, good
but,
point.
But I feel like in terms of kind of celebrated American music, kind of the birth of the diva in my mind is kind of like the 60s and 70s when, you know, the chart toppers were all these incredible black women such as Diana Ross and the Supremes, and without the Supremes, Patti LaBelle, Aretha Franklin, Tina Turner, so on. And to this day, I mean, going back to the idea of stan culture, like I've seen quite a few of these women live, and a lot of the fans in the front row are like these people that worship them, like the Diana Ross stans that are like mostly older gay men and older black women that just like live for Diana Ross.
That's true. It's got a more modern spin today with stanning, I guess, because
yeah,
there's just so much like ways you can, you know, there's so many mediums today, I feel like, that where you can kind of like show your affection. Because back in the day, like, I don't know, like, how did people show their affection?
Yeah, it was very different. I mean, you didn't know every move and every tweet and every moment of an artist's life. I mean, I think someone like Diana Ross or Aretha, like, you know, they would release the album, the singles, they would maybe go on tour, but otherwise you didn't have too much access to them. You know, maybe there would be the tabloid story about a divorce or a new person they're dating, but it wasn't like now where it's like you really know every move and you know every pose and you know what I mean? It's like you can literally like fully imitate their lives because it's all there for you to see. I think back in the day, there was a little more mystery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like people feel like even closer to people because they have so much access, you know? Maybe that's why RuPaul like went off Instagram. There's too much access.
Well, you know, I've heard theories, and I guess RuPaul can kind of qualify as a 90s diva in some way. But yeah, apparently like a lot of the early tweets and Instagram posts and whatnot were problematic for a variety of reasons. So I think before Ru got fully canceled, she just decided, like, let me remove everything and pretend it never existed. But it's like, we still have photos of you wearing a Confederate flag dress. That exists. Like, you did that. So I don't know. You can't totally erase the past, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, like, Drag Race fans are, like, some of the most passionate fans I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like mm-hmm. K-pop fans or something.
Exactly.
They can be a little vicious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
it kind of makes it fun. There's almost like a competitive nature to standing, like who's the biggest one and who knows the most and who got the most autographs or who got the most selfies or whatever the case may be. But yeah, I feel like stan culture, and I guess as it ties into like diva culture, is like a thing. I mean, I remember hearing stories. I never have seen Mariah live, and we'll get to her for sure later this episode. But like, I know when she does those Christmas shows, people fly in from all over the world, particularly parts of Asia. And like, those people come in to see her in New York, where she does the Christmas performances, like every year, and they go to every single one of them. And in many cases, she'll perform, you know, six nights or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Totally.
It's hardcore.
It's very hardcore. But there's so many divas of the 90s to discuss, I feel like. We couldn't discuss all of them, but we chose some of our, you know, notables to kind of talk about in this episode.
I kind of want to start with Shania because it's a little left field for us to discuss someone who kind of started in country. And also, she had such a big moment in the 90s that maybe that'd be an interesting one to just kind of pop into for a moment.
Yeah, I mean, she was like the queen of country pop. Could be wrong because maybe Dolly could be considered that, but like she was one of the ones that first ones that I remember crossing over from country to pop.
I feel like Dolly did as well. But yeah, in my mind, there are kind of three women that have made the full transition. And in the 70s and 80s, it was Dolly. In the 90s, it was Shania. And then over the last 15 or so years, it's obviously been Taylor Swift, who I don't even associate with country at all now. Shania, I think, with that breakthrough album, Come On Over from 97, with all those huge singles, I feel like even though they were big pop staples and whatnot, and you'd hear on the radio at the supermarket, at the laundromat, like there was also an element of country in them. I mean, I'm thinking back to the video of like That Don't Impress Me Much, where she's just kind of, where is she? I don't know. She's in the middle of something and she's wearing like a leopard skin kind of tacky outfit. I love it. But it's like she kept on to her country roots, you know?
Yeah. And she was building kind of like a strong woman catalog too, you know, like, Man, I Feel Like a Woman, you know, That Don't mm-hmm. Impress Me Much. They had like a sass to them. And a lot of them probably became like women theme songs, and they were in like so many commercials about like who knows what, like probably bras and like whatever.
I'm sure. I'm sure she made a lot of money from those type of things.
Yeah. So, but then, you know, she kind of like petered out and had a bunch of like personal problems, I think, over the years.
I mean, I still love, like, if I were to hear You're Still the One out somewhere, I don't know where. I think not at a club, but I do think that that's like a really pretty like pop love song, you know?
Yeah,
I'm not gonna deny it.
Yeah, yeah. To me, there's still kind of like an element of borderline cheese to it.
And also, one other huge single, there were so many huge singles from this album, but one that comes to mind that I think we forget might have been even the biggest one in terms of like Billboard number one success was From This Moment On, which was like the big dramatic ballad from the album, which was also, I guess, a love song. I just remember, like, that song was used at every friggin' wedding for years as, like, the one that, like, you know, the bride and groom come out to, and it's, like, stare into each other's eyes, and, like, here we go on this journey. It's so tacky. It's amazing, though. And similarly, there's a song that was released in 2000 called I Hope You Dance, which is, like, on every Light FM station still, like, constantly, by Leanne Womack. And that song was also, like, kind of a country pop crossover. She never became a huge star, but I feel like that song to this day is still used at all these very traditional weddings as, like, the father dance, the father-daughter, like, first dance kind of song. And it's like, it's so tacky and cheesy and cringy, but at the same time, I almost expect it when I go see, you know, a friend or a relative's, like, huge-ass 200-person wedding in New Jersey. You know what I mean?
It's so funny, the songs that are played at weddings. It's just, like, too much.
It really is.
I went to a wedding once where, like, they had, like, an indie rock DJ, and nobody danced. Like, all the old people didn't know what the songs were, and, like, maybe us youngins, you know, like, because this was, like, in the aughts for sure, and, like, could dance to some of them, but, you know, like, it just doesn't work the same, because it's not the setting of, like, an indie rock dance club or something like that. You're, like, at a wedding, so, you know, context is everything. So, like, songs that maybe we would have danced to at, like, Don Hills or something, like, just doesn't work, like, in the setting of a wedding.
I completely agree. And, you know, for a short time there, I was earning some money doing some wedding DJing, sometimes for friends and sometimes just for people that would hire me. But I do recall one time that it didn't go well because we didn't play what people want to hear at a wedding. And it was my very good friend's wedding in DC, and, you know, we used to go in the early aughts to, like, all these Britpop and indie dance night parties. So at her wedding, she wanted me to DJ, like, Blur and James and the Smiths and the Cure and so on, and, you know, Spiritualized, whatever. And yeah, there were, like, six of us that were having the time of our lives, but, like, the majority of the people at the wedding were like, what in the hell is, you know, is, you know, Blur song too? I have no idea, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny.
Like, what is this? I'll just eat my chicken.
You know? Exactly. But one artist they probably would have wanted to hear, and also I associate with weddings, is maybe one of the biggest acts of the 90s, Celine Dion.
Yeah, man. So big, she only needs one name. I guess that's a trademark
Celine.
Of the diva, right? Like, if you can just say their first name, and they've made it. They're a diva. So maybe Taylor Swift isn't there yet. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I have my own views on Taylor Swift, but, like, when I think of the word Taylor, I don't automatically think Taylor Swift. I don't know.
She needs to, like, work on that.
She needs to trademark
it. Just go by Taylor.
Exactly.
But, yeah, back to Celine. Like, yeah, I mean, she had so many freaking hits during this time. I can't believe it. I mean, like, how many albums did she put out? It looks like she put out, like, four albums, maybe?
Quite.
During this period?
In that time span, yeah.
Like, I mean, geez.
And she had so many international mega hits. It was kind of crazy. And, you know, what I kind of love about Celine is that she kind of, if you look back at, like, the late 80s, early, very early 90s, like, she's kind of still figuring out her place and her look, and kind of, her voice was always there, but, like, she's kind of getting into her own skin. And now, well, throughout the 90s, but even, I guess, specifically when you look now and she's doing, like, Fashion Week and, you know, whatever, like, she has owned her diva dumb, or whatever you want to say. And, like, I kind of think it's amazing that she has transitioned into this, like, powerful, confident, like force,
yeah.
You know, like, and, you know, when her husband passed a few years ago, I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. 'Cause they were so closely aligned, and obviously she met him very, very early into her career. I didn't know how she was going to do without him, but she's been, you know, she survived that. And, you know, obviously was in Vegas for many, many years, in one of the most successful, like, live shows, I think, ever. And now she's still doing her thing. So
she has a
kudos
her
to
voice,
to her.
You know? So that's kind of
amazing. Yeah, she still sounds really great.
What are your favorite like Celine songs from the 90s?
I mean, when I say favorite, I also kind of come to this from like a, this is such cheese.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like when I say these songs I enjoy, I enjoy them, but also like a little tongue in cheek, just to keep throw that out there. I think my favorite of the bunch is her most dramatic song and video from this time. It's All Coming Back to Me Now.
That's a good one, actually. That's probably the least cheesiest.
I feel like,
I don't know.
I feel like it's essentially kind of like a Meatloaf song or something.
Oh my god, you're so right. Oh my god, I never thought of it like that. It totally sounds so dramatic.
It's like 7-8 minutes. I feel like if you play It's All Coming Back to Me Now and like, I don't know, one of those big early 90s Meatloaf singles, I forget the title. Oh, I Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That. Like, they're kind of the same song.
Is amazing. Now I want to hear Meatloaf sing like Celine Dion's catalog or something.
That I would be interested in. Yeah. I wouldn't purchase it, but I'd be interested in
it. I feel like the song that always comes to mind for me is All By Myself, just because like I was totally into like Bridget Jones's Diary. Like that opening
scene. Oh, goodness.
Where Renee Zellweger is like just like singing along to the song and just like crying.
Oh my god.
It's like the ultimate single girl, you know, moment.
Oh my god. She does a really good rendition of that song for sure.
And obviously like one of her biggest ones is the Titanic song.
Well, yeah, I think arguably that is probably the biggest. But, like, if honestly, in my mind, if I never hear that song again, I'll be just fine. Like, that has to be one of the most played songs ever in the history of radio.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty bad. And, like, I was, like, in college that year that it came out. I was in this, like, group of friends where I was, like, the token virgin of the group. And I was, like... I was like really trying to lose my virginity.
We're going deep.
And you know, it was just like one of those times. And then like I'm pretty sure that like maybe that song came on the radio when the event happened.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh my god.
And I feel like that's like ingrained.
Wow, the soundtrack.
And I was just like, this is the cheesiest fucking moment of my life.
Since we're going there, I want to say that my soundtrack to that moment was Sigur Rós's A Giant Disparition, which is very different.
Wow.
Yeah, I was also a little bit more of like a late bloomer to that realm.
Yeah, me as well.
Yeah,
so yeah.
Yeah. Oh my god, that's funny. But yeah, anyway, go back to Celine. I wonder if she's like dating now that the husband has passed. Speaking of
like
love,
is she on Tinder?
I don't know.
Swiping left and right.
And her sentence is like, "I'm your lady, and you are my man."
That is so good,
Celine.
Jeez, now I hope she's doing that.
Well, it seems like she's enjoying her life, and her kids are all grown now. So, you know, I just remember, like, my grandpa in the 90s, like, you couldn't talk crap about Celine. Celine was, like, this godlike figure for him. And particularly that Falling Into You album, I could still picture the CD and that album cover. Like, you couldn't touch Celine. Like, Celine, like... You couldn't. But I don't know why my grandpa was just like convinced that she was the best female vocalist and the best male vocalist was Andrea Bocelli. Yeah.
You know what's funny is like she was always in that like adult contemporary mode, I feel like, you know.
Yeah.
So that makes sense to me in a lot of ways. You know, like was she ever like hip? You know? Like I just feel like she was always like singing to like 40-year-olds, you know.
Yeah,
which is where we're at now. Right?
You know. But I think for me, looking back, like I could appreciate her more now than in the 90s because I kind of look back at it in a with a very different lens, but also like to hear a Celine song now and like sing a Celine song at karaoke, like it's not only ironic, it's just like it's strange, it's funny. So like I've taken a kind of a 180, but in the 90s I didn't really care to like ever really listen to her because that wasn't my thing. I was listening to alternative radio really, but like, but I mean, you can't deny the force of Celine. Yeah. I feel, you know, and she has her own stance, which I didn't realize until a few years ago, that like she also, in a similar way that like Mariah has her lambs, like Celine has her hardcore fans that like worship her as well. But I guess all these big pop stars do.
I mean, like, you know, Vegas isn't one of my favorite places, but every time I've been there and walking around, all you hear is Celine Dion. Like, you know how like they play the music outside in Vegas, like, and you're just like walking. Just, like, everywhere it's Celine. So, you know, she's made it. She doesn't have to do anything else in her life ever.
No, she's pretty universal. I mean, everybody knows Celine.
And she never, like, did anything to kind of, no scandals or anything like that, you know? So.
No, and I think she really seems like a sweet person. She is her own presence in a way, and I feel like she can't be faking it. Like, she's kind of awkward. She's kind of funny. She's kind of, I don't know. Like, it's just her. Like, she is this character. Like, that is who she really is. You know? So I appreciate that. But yeah, she was part of this, like, late 90s VH1 series that actually, it only aired 2 years, but I feel like it lives on, like the Titanic song. VH1 Divas Live. But I remember it was like all the commercials and the hype leading up to it. And it was like, it was such a to-do. And I want to say it was either at Beacon or Radio City, but one of the big New York theaters. And it went on for, like I said, 2 years. The first year was Celine, Aretha, Mariah, Shania, and Gloria. Everybody ending in A, I guess, except for Celine. That's a pretty like serious powerhouse lineup.
Yeah,
I gotta
say. Must have been intense backstage.
Oh my god, I can't even imagine what the writers looked like and everything else.
Yeah, and you know, it was that's actually like a good mix of divas too. It's like all over the place as far as like genre and like types of singers and stuff. But like all big personalities.
Absolutely.
That 99 lineup, though, that was confusing. I was looking at that.
Well, it seems like they tried to outdo themselves from the previous year, but, like, I feel like it's a little hit and miss. So, Tina Turner, I mean, obviously needs to be there. Elton John, I don't know. I don't think it's fair to put a guy on a Divas bill.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a stretch. They might have just... Maybe he wanted to be on the bill. Who knows?
Well, I'm sure he wanted to be on.
Proclaimed diva. Yeah, I know. Like, it's weird to have a guy. Because there actually is, like, a term for a male diva. Devo?
Devo. I feel like that term doesn't get used a lot
nobody
days.
Uses that. Oh, yeah, and Cher, too, who, you know.
Well.
She is definitely a diva. I mean, she only has one name. So.
Of course. And she's been a diva for decades upon decades.
They had Tretch on the bill, though. But, that's kind of weird.
Okay, that I was going to mention that. I don't understand what that was about. I have to say, I haven't revisited VH1 Divas Live 99 in 21 years, but I assume it was a guest appearance. Although I can't even think, like, and maybe I'm being forgetful here, but like I can't think of a song that like Mary J sings with Tretch, but who knows? Maybe it does exist.
One either, but you know.
Well, I'm assuming he was with Mary J or Whitney because I don't think there was a Tretch Leanne Rimes duet.
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, Chaka Khan, that's a huge one.
Of course.
And Brandy. Yeah. I don't know if she was quite that level yet at that time. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel like some of these were a stretch. Like, I feel like when you look at the 98 lineup, Celine, Mariah, Aretha, Gloria, Shania, I guess Shania was relatively new to, like, mega stardom, but, like, the rest had been around. But, like, to book, in my mind, Brandy, Faith Hill, Leanne Rimes, like, they only were, like, super popular at that point for, like, 3 years, 4 years. So, I don't know. To me, you have to earn your right to be a diva, you know? I do want to, I think, revisit this episode just to kind of experience it again, because I only watched it when it aired live in 99 and never since.
I feel like Cher had a really big presence in the 90s, so... Just like,
of course.
I mean, around the late 90s, at least, I was in college in New York, and I was going around to bars, you know, underage, but still going, trying to get into bars. And there was this one bar that I just, like, loved to go to in the West Village that was called Hell, and it was, like, a mix of gay and straight, like, people, so it was kind of fun, and they always mm-hmm. played Believe, her song Believe, like, always, like.
I mean, that song was kind of a game changer, because no one had done auto-tune in that way before. And also, like, Cher hadn't had a mega, mega hit, in my mind, since probably Turn Back Time, which is more like 88, 89, 90, I have to check the date, but it had been a while. So when she came back with this and it sounded like nothing else on the radio, everybody's mind was kind of like, what? And then Believe was a number one single across the world.
I know, it was crazy.
Yeah.
So it was like a great moment for her, I think. Now it's almost like funny, but at the time everyone was dancing to mm-hmm. it, you know.
Of course. And then like every song she put out since then, for probably even till current, is like kind of Believe-esque in a way. Like, kind of dancey, plenty of auto-tune. She actually put out, what was it? You know, she was involved in the latest Mamma Mia film, and then she put out an album of ABBA covers about a year or two ago. I think it was 2 years ago now. It's actually kind of incredible, but there is a lot of auto-tune on there.
I was
going
to say, if she's singing ABBA, that's really hard to sing
yes,
ABBA.
Yes, the whole album.
She must have.
The whole album. I mean, you have to listen to it. It's really a trip. But, like, everything from Fernando to, like, Gimme a Man After Midnight, like, everything,
dude,
you know.
I wish you could sing karaoke with auto-tune. Does that exist? Because then
that would be a great business model.
Like, whatever, and they would just sound cool, you know? T-Pain was, like, the rapper, auto-tune rapper. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's literally all auto-tune.
You know, Cher started it.
Cher did start it. And I mean, also, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about her incredible fashion. I know this isn't a fashion podcast, but like, she has had some looks through the years. And I love her looks in the Believe video.
Another diva that I like. This one, I genuinely like her. Annie Lennox. You know,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
of course.
And
same.
So, you know, I think even at the time that all this was coming out, I thought she was really cool. And but she had her album Diva, and that had Why, Walking on Broken Glass, and those are all like all over like MTV. I feel like.
Oh yeah, those are beautiful singles. I mean, I actually, when I still hear Why to this day, I get really emotional.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but I don't know. It's one of those songs that, like, you just kind of feel in your gut. I mean, going back to a previous episode this season when we were revisiting the Sinead O'Connor album, her debut, like, certain songs on that album just hit you. And I feel this very similarly with this particular Annie Lennox album. But she's always been, like, this, in my view, this, like, master interpreter of song. And obviously her vocals are stunning. Yeah, I adore her, and you know, everything, obviously, from Eurythmics to current day. And she also does so much for the world as well, which I think some pop stars don't use their power and their voice as loudly as they could for things outside of their own music. And I feel like she's someone who does and wants to see change in the world and actively does what she can. You know, from a place of privilege and also
fame.
Yeah,
she carries herself really well, and I feel like I just have a lot mm-hmm. of respect for her. Like, I don't really think she has a reputation for being, like, terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't think so either.
She's, like, another level of diva.
Absolutely. Should we we do like a quick lightning round of divas that from the 90s that that we kind of have to mention briefly. Notably, the late 90s pop boom, which introduced us to Christina and Britney.
Oh,
I mean, come on, that was everywhere. That was that also kind of changed the pop game for better or worse. I mean, and then into the early aughts and mid-aughts, I guess. You know, it just...
I mean, it's kind of a love-hate thing for me because I feel like half of, you know, like the serious music lover in me, like, obviously wasn't into all that teen pop. And then just, like, how huge it got in that era where it was, like, boy bands and then, like, these, like, you know, ex-Disney star singers and, like, all kind of coming up and growing up and then like really being like weirdly sexualized also and I always thought that was like weird and creepy. Christina at least is still, you know, in the game, you know, and I don't know what happened to Britney. She kind of fell apart.
Well, Britney had the very successful Vegas run, but I mean, I don't think her heart has been in it for a very long time. And also, you know, she's faced a lot of personal struggles. Christina is still, Christina now will perform in theaters still, you know, and still sounds great. Britney, I feel like, and we're going to get hate for this, or I'm going to get hate for this, but I mean, she's kind of phoning it in a bit. Like, she's not really dancing. She's definitely lip syncing. And, like, she's charging $2,500 for a meet and greet, and she won't even talk to you or look at you. I'm sorry. That's a little lame, you know.
She's over it. Just trying to...
Yeah, she's over it.
Money she can, and then peace out.
You know, who's had a very successful Vegas run, and it also had, you know, key moments in the 90s is Jennifer Lopez. Yeah, she's in Vegas doing her thing also. Well, not in the middle of this pandemic, but yeah, she had a very successful Vegas run. I assume it'll return. I bet that's a fun show. I mean, I was never a huge J-Lo fan, but like, I think if I were to hear If I Had My Love and Love Don't Cost a Thing and whatever else, I would get down, I guess. Why not, you know? I mean, she's an entertainer.
Yeah, I feel like I've always had, like, a weird fascination with J-Lo, I'd say, you know, just because, like, how she started and, you know, she was, like, acting, you know, primarily in the beginning, you know, besides the whole Fly Girl thing with, like, In Living Color. I was always, like, fascinated with her. I never, like, thought of her as, like, a great vocalist, per se, but I was still kind of, like, kind of into her songs in a weird way, like not in love with her songs, but you know, kind of fascinated with like her song Tonight or something. Like I was just
Waiting for Tonight, you know, that's a great song.
But like I feel like now I like her as a personality. When I was like briefly on TikTok earlier in the pandemic, her and what is it, like A-Rod that she's dating, they do these, like, weird TikToks all the time. It's just, like,
Oh, do they? I didn't know that.
And so, like, now I kind of, like, just think, like, she'd be, like, a cool person to hang out with or something, you know?
Yeah, I think she'd be fun to hang out with, too. And, you know, I think she also had a bit of a resurgence this year because of that Super Bowl performance with Shakira, which pretty much got, like, widespread, like, thumbs up, I feel, you know?
There's also, like, Paula Abdul, I guess, back in the 90s. It was, like, kind of, like, a interesting era for Paula, I feel like, because it was, like, Rush, Rush. I mean, I remember that video pretty vividly, because it was, like, kind of a remake, right? Like a James Dean, Natalie Wood moment or something like that.
Exactly, yeah.
And so that was, like, a song, I don't know how I feel about that. It's kind of like comical in a way, but obviously it's like a serious vibe song.
I mean, yeah, I giggle when I think of that song. What did she say? Rush, rush, hurry, come to me.
Yeah.
I mean, but she says it very dramatically. It's
funny. Vibology, that was kind of a funny song. And I also forgot Promise of a New Day until like I looked up this. The album listing for Spellbound. I was just like, oh yeah, that one too. You know, not her best songs, but yeah, she had a moment and she's still kicking in a way.
Well, now she's you know, doing like the panelist type shows and whatnot. She's so, in my mind, closely associated with like pop music from the very late 80s, early 90s that, you know, she's iconic, you know.
Did you want to say Sade too?
I want to say Sade as well, who I kind of appreciated more, or I appreciate more these days than I did in the 90s. You know, just, she's one of a kind. I adore her. So, and I feel like so much of the music now that you see that's kind of like buzz, indie, buzzy, is actually very R&B inspired, and particularly inspired by Sade. I mean, a band like the XX, I feel, is so Sade inspired. And then if you think about, you know, recent singles and albums from, I don't know, Solange or Erykah Badu or whomever, like there's a lot of Sade influence. I feel like it has carried through over the last 30 or so years.
I mean, you know, her song No Ordinary Love, I mean, that you just can't argue with it. It's just such a great song, and every time it comes on, it just like gives off good feelings, you know. And and it's so like smooth, you know. And I think she's like pretty universal among men and women too. Like men love her, and and you know, it's like the quintessential like let's make out, you know, song or something like that. It's always on probably like some kind of romantic playlist.
I feel the same. I mean, I feel like her sensuality versus someone like, I don't know, let's say Paula Abdul, like with Sade, I feel like it is a lot more sincere. And with Paula Abdul, it was a lot more kind of put on, you know, like, look, I'll be, you know what I mean? But I feel like Sade just kind of, that's just her being, that's her presence. Like her music is sensual. Her music does, you know, is make out music, you know, it just, totally. It is what it is. Yeah. I mean, there are so many. So yeah, obviously we're just touching upon a few. This episode, but and also in a previous episode we discussed Beyonce and Destiny's Child, Janet, Toni Braxton, Monica.
So many.
I mean, there are many.
But you know, we can't cover them all.
Yeah.
But we are going to cover a couple of great albums, diva albums from the 90s.
Yes, I kind of, in my mind, I feel like the two we chose are quintessential.
Yeah. We can start with Mariah, because she was huge in the 90s. This album, Daydream, from 95, it was really like a turning point for her, I think, because she was starting to take like a little bit more control in like the kind of songs that she sings and like the direction that she wanted them to go in. So there's a little bit of empowerment with that. She was kind of delving more into R&B and hip-hop, which people hadn't really done before. So she was really kind of changing the game a little bit. The album as a whole, I thought, was like pretty good, actually.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty strong pop album. I think part of the reason, I don't know the exact timing, but I do think part of the reason why this album sounds more freeing in a sense and more of her authentic self is because I believe around this time she got divorced from that Sony executive she was with, who was garbage. And I feel like with this album, she had a little more, like you were saying, creative control.
When I was like revisiting it, there were a lot more songs than I remembered, actually, when I was listening to it. So, but still, I kind of like still like Fantasy the best. I don't know. It just like has a groove. I actually didn't realize she sampled Tom Tom Club for Genius of Love, which makes me like it even more. And then that was also a song that she, like, did some remix for that everybody was, like, at the time questioning. Like, she wanted ODB, Old Dirty Bastard, on the track for the remix. And people were, like, doubtful, but it became, like, a huge hit.
I love that Old Dirty Bastard remix, I'm not going to lie. Particularly that line, like, me and Mariah go back like babies with pacifiers. I love that line. I mean, I think it was unexpected, and let's be honest, I think because he was this like hip hop act that seemed kind of like, I don't know, like scary to some people, quote unquote, like it was kind of like, how is this going to translate into pop radio? But, you know, she was really smart because a song like Fantasy, which I want to say is probably one of my favorite pop songs ever to this day, that the regular version of the track went to pop radio, and then the ODB remix went to hip hop radio, and then, you know, she she had success on multiple platforms, which, you know, not too many people were doing.
I mean, I
you
think
know?
She's always, like, trying to do something different.
Once November 1st hits till, like, the end of the year, it's impossible in the United States of America to not hear All I Want for Christmas at least once a day. Somewhere, somehow. And I think last year she was actually able to bring it back to number one. I don't know how many songs that are 25, 26 years old can go back to number one like that. So, you know, her stands are serious. But also, that's a great song.
Yeah, totally. Like, didn't she just recently, like, try to, like, she had a song on TikTok that went all over the place. Yeah, that, like, brought her back, like, everywhere again. She knows how to, like, use platforms, I guess, and, like, kind of change the way people think about her. It was Fantasy that was going on TikTok.
It was Fantasy. Was, like, oh, okay. I'm not on TikTok. I'm too old. But, yeah, the Fantasy, you know, like you said, is your repeat, and I think it is for me as well. I also just want to shout out Always Be My Baby. I think that is such a great song, and the video where she's on the tire swing over the little, like, lake, I love it. I love that song, too.
It's kind of funny because when I was doing some research on this, I was reading, of all things, a Pitchfork article. Grimes said that the first time she heard Mariah Carey, that's when she decided to start Grimes. So now we have her to blame.
You know, it's funny that you pulled up this quote because many, many years ago, I saw Grimes DJ after a Magical Cloud show at Glasslands, RIP, and I love this transition. She transitioned from Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You, to Taylor Swift, Trouble, which is, like, one of the few Taylor Swift songs I can stand. So I was like, I can't, like, we are really dancing to pop music at Glasslands. Like, and, like, I was looking at, over at Grimes, who at the time was already quite successful, but not, like, megastar. And she was having her life. She was dancing. She was, like, flipping out. So, yeah, it's not too surprising, actually, for me to see this quote, but it brought back a certain memory.
I think we both had the same skip, too, which is kind of funny. Melt Away? Yeah.
Yeah, I can't deal with Babyface. I never could. It was, like, too, I don't know, too much cheese. Like, I can accept some, but, like, for me, it was just, like, right out of a, you know, 2 in the morning, like, songs that go on your romance CD, buy 2 now for $24.99. Like, I can't, you know, like, I could visualize the 90s commercial. I don't know. He was never my thing, as a solo act or as a producer, I mean, or anything.
It's kind of funny because in that same Pitchfork article, they were saying that her voice was so, like, low and sultry in that song, not typical for her, that people actually thought Babyface was singing. It's just hilarious.
Oh, that's funny.
But, like, another huge album from the 90s was Whitney Houston, The Bodyguard soundtrack, you know, which I guess she's only on half, right?
She's only on the first half. This album, to this day, is one of the best-selling albums of all time internationally. I guess I forgot that the first half was her and the second half were, like, an assortment of other people. I think when most people think Bodyguard, because obviously the film as well as the key singles from the soundtrack, they just think of Whitney only. But it did have some other stuff. But, I mean, for me, I don't know. I'm not really interested in most of the second half. Definitely the biggest single was Whitney's reinterpretation of I Will Always Love You, which is so wildly different than Dolly's version. I mean, both are great. I've seen Dolly say that, you know, she wrote the song and she had success with it, and Whitney just kind of skyrocketed and took it somewhere else completely. Dolly was just happy to get the royalties, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, back then, Whitney could do no wrong. Like, she could sing anything. There was just, like, a surrealness to her when she was singing a song. Still gives me chills.
Especially that part of the song where it's, like, where she slows it down, and then there's, like, 2 seconds of silence, and she comes back with, and, like, it's like, you get, totally, you kind of get shivers, yeah.
But I didn't choose that as my repeat. I actually chose I Have Nothing. I just like the strength and vulnerability in the song, and it has like this like cool drama to it. I just like what the message in that song.
Yeah, I love that track too. I mean, I love almost every track from the first half of this record, all the Whitney songs. I think if I were forced to pick, I would choose either I'm Every Woman. I think it's just an amazing Chaka cover, and, you know, kind of uplifting, obviously. And then I kind of really like Run to You. And I'm typically not the person who would choose a ballad, but Whitney's voice, I mean, is... I don't even know what words to use. I mean, particularly right around this time before she had her struggles, like her voice was just like otherworldly, you know, and she could just carry anything. I think when you have a voice like that, it makes me kind of feel things. And Run to You was one of those songs.
I guess, like, you know, both of our skips kind of come from more of the second half, because I feel like every Whitney song on there was like impeccable. Like, I don't know, like I would almost skip the entire second half, except I actually do love Soul System. It's Gonna Be a Lovely Day, and I think that's like a pretty solid song. But everything else that's not Whitney, I would skip, and I did skip.
That one is the one with Michelle Visage, right?
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Is she on that? I had no idea.
Yeah, she's on that track.
What?
Listen, I only know this because, like, I feel like for a moment on Drag Race, she would always talk about how she is on track 9 or whatever it is of the Bodyguard soundtrack. I remember looking it up and it was this song. So she's on this song.
Oh my God. I just Googled the video and it's like an image of her face with flowers on it. So yeah, you're right. I can't believe I didn't know that.
But it's kind of sort of a cover of Lovely Day, the Bill Withers song, right? I think so. Yeah, that one I don't mind. I guess just because, like, how could you compare anything to like these iconic, dramatic, like monumental Whitney songs at the peak of her career? It's very difficult for anyone to match that, you know. But also, I think the second half of this album has like a Kenny G song. I could definitely never hear Kenny G again in my life and be fine.
When I saw Kenny G was on the second half, I mean, poor Kenny G, but like seriously.
I mean, I just feel like, maybe not his music, but I guess just his being, and maybe this is a little mean-spirited, but, like, he just kind of seemed like he's trolling us. I don't know. I don't know. With that hair. That hair. I think it's all about that terrible perm-like thing.
I don't know.
You know? Not my favorite. But it doesn't matter. I don't think people bought this album for anything other than the Whitney songs, really.
They just, like, everything else was kind of filler.
Yeah. You know, she had some, obviously the Bodyguard soundtrack was such a huge moment, but like she had great singles from the late 90s too that became kind of like these dancey club hits. One of my favorites is It's Not Right, But It's Okay, where she's calling out Bobby Brown for cheating on her. It's amazing. I love that song. Also, one of her late 90s songs that, like, my partner's favorite song is Heartbreak Hotel, which is not an Elvis cover. It is a song with Kelly Price and Faith Evans, and it's also like, F you, man who screwed me over. It's amazing. She had a lot of that energy in the late 90s because, she was over. She was over the drama of Bobby Brown.
She should have been, you know. that was like another thing. Like, I used to love Bobby Brown, but then after I saw like clips of their reality show together, like, I just could not stand him.
Oh my God. It's a lot. Yeah, I don't think that helped her in any way. And from my understanding, he's the one who was pressuring her to do it, and she finally caved. But I don't think it painted either one of them in a very positive light.
Her image fell apart after that, sadly, you know. And it was like a side of her that people just didn't need to see. I don't think people needed to see that. Mm-hmm. If he pressured her into doing that, like, totally selfish.
His career really hasn't been much of anything in a long time.
Although I love old Bobby Brown, which kind of sucks to say, but like, I love old Bobby Brown and New Edition and stuff like that. And somehow it hasn't tainted those songs for me too much, but, you know, him as a person, not into it.
Yeah, when I went to that ladies' night gathering that I discussed on a previous episode this season, he was the headliner technically, and he came on at like 1:30 in the morning, and I stayed for one song, and it was not my prerogative, but yeah. I was like, this is really bad, I gotta go. Yeah, I felt bad, but for some reason I wanted to stay till the end of the evening or towards the end of the evening because I felt like weirdly it was like out of respect for Whitney or something. I don't know why. But yeah, he was. It was pretty bad. It was like embarrassing, and I didn't want to see any more of it. You know, yeah. But I mean, Whitney will live on forever.
She will, and still does. You know, like I just she just had so many hits, and her voice was so incredible, and not in a cheesy way. Somehow she avoided the cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I also love that as she kind of revealed more of herself and got a little more, I don't know what term to use, but like just kind of ballsy, I guess, that she just, I don't know, I kind of appreciate like, you know, I don't give a fuck Whitney of the late 90s and beyond, you know, when she wasn't trying so hard or wasn't being told to try so hard to like be this, you know, beautiful, pristine, like flawless pop diva. She's like, I curse, I smoke, I hate on people, whatever, you know. I kind of love that, like, she kind of revealed her true self and you know, wasn't under the spell of, you know, a major label anymore. Yeah. You know, anyway, I miss her, and I still listen to Whitney from time to time, so I'm glad that we had a chance to revisit the Bodyguard soundtrack.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And I'm glad we had a Divas episode. So that is another episode of Mixtape Memories, and we will catch you next time. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thank you.
With the Baker's Plus card, it's easy to get lower than low prices. For the win! Earn fuel points on every purchase and save up to $1 a gallon at the pump. The Baker's Plus card. All you do is win. Big, big savings. Sign up now at bakersplus.com and start saving. Baker's. Fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your favorites with the Buy 5 or More Save $1 Each sale. Simply buy 5 or more participating items and save $1 each with your card. Baker's. Fresh for everyone.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.